Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Tribe of Two, the officially unofficial podcast for all of Star Wars. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 1, Episode 8. It's the season finale, Part 8, The Jedi, the Witch, and the Warlord of Ahsoka. Aaron, how are you feeling? It's the end of the season. Everything that will be said about Ahsoka has been said. She's potentially out of the picture. Who knows? But how are you feeling after the dust has settled?
Do you remember how, when was episode 5, when they did the Anakin meeting her on the world between worlds or whatever, and I said this episode made the Star Wars canon better. It made the prequels better by its existing.
Mm-hmm.
This finale is like the opposite of that for this season of Ahsoka. This finale made the good parts of the season less good in retrospect, and the parts that I thought were tedious or non-Star Warsy just terrible. And it's really colored my opinion of Dave Filoni going forward. I talked about at the beginning of this season that like I have two Dave Filonis before me. I have the man who's going to be the creative genius, the respecter of the Star Wars lore, the man who's going to give us a plan going forward and save the main canon of Star Wars, versus Dave Filoni as a cartoon guy who doesn't know how, you know, who just has been successful by cherry picking the bones of the discarded legends and refashioning them in his position and throwing them up into cartoons, and he's got an undeserved reputation. Starting to feel like the latter is the case. And if he is going to be the savior of Star Wars, he needs somebody to rein him in and be like, I don't know that you can do all this. I don't know that you've... a lot of this shit just didn't feel like Star Wars to me. I'm like, this is some weird fucking shit that's kind of come out of nowhere. It feels derivative. It feels like not only is he cherry picking the best out of the Star Wars expanded universe and legends, but he's just cherry picking out of just everything. Like just all kinds of mishmash, like The Walking Dead style zombie stormtroopers. Why the fuck not? Spiritual katana blades. Why the fuck not? You have a person that has zero force sensitivity that you called an expert witness that has literally thousands of years of history of Jedi saying this is the worst fucking Jedi candidate I've ever seen. And in like a handful of episodes, she's outdoing Luke Skywalker at the beginning of Return of the Jedi, who was the scion of Skywalker, who's uniquely powerful in the Force. I don't get it. I don't get it, and like I haven't even started bitching about this episode. Fuck off my lawn, Jim. What do you have to say?
I'm right there with you, man. That addresses some of the bigger problems with this on like a Star Wars level, but this episode itself is garbage. I mean, there are things in the plot that happen in this that make zero sense at all. And if they want me to believe that Thrawn is this incredible tactical genius, they can't have him do shit like he does in this episode, because it's ridiculous.
People warned us, though, episodes ago about Filoni and turning Admiral Thrawn into a Saturday morning villain. That like that's
what
thing.
It is, man. This is cartoon writing from a cartoon writer.
The reason Thrawn was so badass is that he fucking stayed winning until he finally was defeated, and that was it.
Right.
You know, and it took the combined efforts of a galaxy and the Jedi and all. You can't just, you know, have him lose like 5 or 6 times in the space of 3 episodes and have him like, part of my plan, and be like, really?
Well, why he technically wins here, right? He accomplishes
he
his goal, which
his,
is to
the goal. But like, yeah, there's many.
But the way he does it makes zero sense. He could have achieved his goal much quicker and much more effectively in many different ways. And the fact that he doesn't see it is ridiculous.
And the fact that this thing is like, why does the hyperspace ring come out down from orbit to pick up the Star Destroyer instead of Star Destroyer going back up? I'll tell you the reason is because if it didn't go that way,
there's
the
no
Jedi wouldn't even gotten a Pheric victory of sending Ezra to go meet Hera, which I'm super glad. I'm so happy for you Rebels fans that you got the emotional payoff of those fans getting to see each other for the first time. I hope you're happy with that payoff, because that's the you're never going to get it again. Like, what 2.5 years from now, they're going to repick and you're going to see Hera and Ezra hug or like catch them. Nope, all that stuff's gone.
That's what this series feels like to me. It feels like a reunion for Rebels fans that ultimately does nothing. It's for long-term Star Wars fans who haven't seen those shows, and also for the canon in general. It does worse than nothing.
Can I tell you, so I assume that like some of this stuff had hit harder for Rebels fans. Someone turned me on Twitter to the Midnight Boys, a Ringer outfit. And they're not known to be haters. I think they have like one maybe potential hater. They'd probably be like a 1.5 on the get off my yard scale. But they're all mostly, I think there's like one Gen Xer. The rest of them are millennials from all different kind of backgrounds and whatnot. And I their reputation for me is that they're pretty. They're podcasting from a place of they want Marvel and Star Wars to succeed. You know.
Sure.
You know, they're willing to overlook some things. They're willing to, you know, trust the, like, and I listen to that, and they're also just steeped in the lore. Every single one of them seen every single Rebels episode. They get all the references. They understand the meaning, and they were very harsh about this episode and how they felt as Rebels fans. And this is something I intuited. That like the entire Rebels finale that led to the banishment of Thrawn and the sacrifice of Ezra and all this stuff was essentially undone by this shitty little 8-episode season. And they're like, you know, all the things that we invented and stuff that doesn't make sense. The fact that like, what is the diabolical need to have Sabine be a Jedi?
Yeah.
Like,
dude,
if you want to have the lightsaber, Mandalorians can wield lightsabers. They have the darksaber. They won't have the force, but they can block blasters with their wrist. Just give them the coolest melee weapon in the game and be like in the whole universe and say, you're not a Jedi, but you're a Mandalore. And that's good enough. Like, so it's like I was pleased to see other people besides us cranky Gen X folks saying this wasn't good enough. And that's all I'm saying. Like, you don't have to start hating Star Wars, but we do have to start holding these people accountable and, you know, stop being so fucking uncritical with our love of this stuff. Are uncritical in your love, get the fuck out of the way of us who are trying to make it better. Because you will love Star Wars no matter what.
Yeah.
I promise you. You will only love it more if shit makes a little bit more sense, okay?
Yeah. Like, you don't have to headcanon so much and... Yeah,
but if they continue to just shit up and roll with like, oh, well, obviously they couldn't take the Star Destroyer to orbit because Thrawn's been there for 8 years and his Star Destroyer ran out of fuel or whatever. Like, if you were one, I'm out. I don't want any part of that bullshit. I've seen where that bullshit leads because I've been watching TV for what, 45 years consciously. So like. Yeah, I'll just wall off my yard and I'll still have my old trilogy and I can laugh at the prequels and I just don't need this going forward. But like, I think we can demand better from a multi-billion-dollar multinational corporation.
Here's the thing. The only way to demand better is to not watch the garbage. And this is a problem. Fool me once, Book of Boba Fett, you know, shame on you. Fool me twice, Ahsoka season one, shame on me, I guess, but after Andor, who can blame me? Fool me a third time with Ahsoka season two or the fucking movies or whatever Filoni's gonna do next, shame on me, because I should know better at this point. Filoni is not the guy who's going to create the substantial Star Wars stuff that I want to see. It's evident. I've seen his stuff. Like, The Mandalorian is as close as he gets to greatness, and even that, in my mind, is like, okay, this is good, but it's not great. It's not Andor level stuff.
And that's the thing, is like, I think I just don't have any hope for what I would call the Skywalker saga of the Star Wars universe. Like, I have a lot of hope for things like Andor, and if there's some independent projects that they're going to spin off with some interesting directors or people, but like, I like until there's a shakeup, like until I hear that like they've added a third person to the Favreau team and Filoni team that's, you know, going to be the Tom Perrotta to their Damon Lindelof, and curb their excesses, or until I hear that like Kathleen Kennedy has stepped down and they put someone, you know, I just don't understand why we should expect for more. Because you're right. Like I said, it's like, yeah, I mean, it's one thing for fans to demand it, but eventually you got to like vote with your what. And the thing exactly. is, it's like, that's
you
the
have to
thing.
Vote with your eyes.
Like the I think that's everything that like the fans don't care about the quality. They just like the lightsabers or stormtroopers or whatever. They like to turn their brains off. What they don't understand is like, that's, I mean, ask the Walking Dead fans how that worked out for them. Because we were saying the same shit in season 3 through 6 of The Walking Dead, while it was still like, okay, not a complete dumpster fire, haha, but like it was going to get, and but we were saying like this just keeps getting worse and worse, the budget keeps getting less and less, but oh, there's 18 million people watching it. That is just not going to work, man. There's not enough people who just want to watch something uncritically, or those people will migrate like a herd to some other thing that's you know, viscerally exciting and what, and there's just not enough people who like Star Wars uncritically to sustain a $1 billion endeavor making that entertainment. So if you, I just feel like if you love Star Wars, you know, like it's great that you personally like this. If you're one that liked this, if you're like, oh, I just love this, this just meant so much to me. But like when 90%+ of the fandom is just like malcontent for some reason or another, that's just not sustainable. And you know, it's like I also go like I listen to a YouTube channel that's known to be to be extremely uncritical about like the Marvel shit and the Disney Plus shit, and I listen to what they had to say, and it's like another fucking universe. They don't talk about the plot or the characters at all, and they offer like analysis like, Ahsoka's lightsaber is cut in half by Morgan here, and she's had this lightsaber for a really long time. Obviously, that meant a lot to her. I'm like, was it obviously? Was like, if this was some like sacred gift between her and Anakin, I don't know. Like, because I was just like, they did not communicate that in the series.
Yeah.
And then like the one critical things they'll say is like, I just couldn't believe it. They'll be like, I'm not sure I believe that 2 TIE fighters could hit the Jedi shuttle and not destroy its wings, but I guess the T-6 Jedi shuttle was known to be very rugged, and the height of the criticism was this. I guess Ezra can build a new lightsaber. I guess Hu Yang just has a whole bunch of attuned kyber crystals going on. Okay. And then they make this frowny face and kind of roll their eyes for like a half a second, and then it's on to how cool the zombie stormtroopers were, and I'm just like, the problem with your problem with this episode is where they got the fucking kyber crystal, dude. Like,
right.
Holy shit. I wish I lived in that just completely, like, if it references something in the cartoon lore, it's good. I wish I could appreciate the stuff on that level, but I just can't.
That's the thing. I feel like so many people who do like this like it for the reasons that they're Rebels fans, right? They like it for the things that they already know about these characters. They like it for the references. I mean, just like the callbacks and the Easter eggs and shit like that, which does not fly for me as someone who's never seen it. I'm looking at the story. I'm looking at the characters. I'm looking at the logic of the narrative, and none of that stuff was up to par. I think the closest they come to being effective in their storytelling is with Ahsoka. And I will give them that. This, for the longest time, I would say this series did not feel like an Ahsoka series. It felt like a Sabine series. Mm. And I think they brought it around at the end to something that felt like an Ahsoka series. Now, I have huge gripes about how that happened, but I think that they eventually rounded out into something that you can squint and see like, oh, there's an arc here for a character that a lot of people love that is somewhat satisfying between Anakin and Ahsoka. I think that's there. Everything else around it, in my opinion, was pretty bad.
But even then, like, the lesson that I think she comes away with, like, a master should uncritically support her apprentice no matter what, is just a lunatic thing to come away from the experience with. And, you know, it's like I was looking and I'm like, you know, 10 minutes in the episode where they talk and like there's a moment where Ahsoka seems like she's going to be the parent that like maybe she's not going to abuse the student, but she's going to be like, look, you know, I love you and I'm your master and I'll support you, but you got to understand you've really boned up and you're going to cause a lot of people a lot of pain and suffering. And we're going to, I hope I'm wrong, but I feel like we're going to have to, there's going to be a lot of consequences, not punishments, mm-hmm. consequences from this, Sabine. And I hope you're ready for it. And I was like, okay. And then like by the end of the episode, I was hoping for them to kind of like come back to that. And if anything, Sabine's just like, you're cool. You did good. Mm-hmm. You did what I would do. You do what Master Anakin did. No notes. And I'm just like, she's really, they're not going to deal with any of the consequences of letting Space Hitler out of jail.
Can you imagine if Sabine were Luthen's Padawan? Look, I know he's not a Jedi, but Luthen would have chewed her ass from here to the next galaxy because he understands the cost of what she did, her decision. Yeah, I feel like Ahsoka, it's cool that you got all zen about this shit and decided, yeah, I just need to support my student. But that does not change the fact that she unleashed a monster and yeah. billions of people are going to suffer for it.
Yeah. And it's a certainty. And like I said, you might, as your her master, stand beside her and be the only one that does. But part of standing beside her is probably preparing her for. But like the fact that they're mm-hmm. not talking this is like, I just yeah. don't think Filoni's even thinking about this.
Which is shocking.
And this is that is the Saturday morning bullshit of it all. Mm-hmm. Like the galaxy doesn't exist beyond our stars and our heroes, and no one else really matters. So,
mm-hmm.
I just, man, I don't know. I don't know. There is just a, and like I said, there's, oof, this might probably need to move it along because we're we got a lot to cover. We haven't even scratched the surface of what I think is just wrong-headed filmmaking.
I'm with you. Let's get into the recap.
We're not interested in Jedi protocol. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
It's time for your training, Padawan. Here's more Tribe of Two.
Let's talk about the title of this, maybe. I don't know. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. This is where it all starts going wrong for me. I don't want Narnia shit in my... I know it's not literally called The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I don't want Narnia shit in my Star Wars shit. Sorry.
This is Dave Filoni is telling us who he is. He, you know, like the World Between Worlds was a thing that he ripped entirely out of the whole Narnia series. And this is him telling us he likes this. Uh-huh. And this is what he enjoys. And this is what he's going to do with Star Wars. So act accordingly, I guess. I mean, like I said, the World Between Worlds, I don't even like care. Like, I obviously I didn't know what the hell that was or anything. I'm just rolling with it as a mysterious Star Wars thing, which I used to love doing. I used to just love just the fact that the Force is a mysterious energy field created by living things and permeating, and you just kind of like could channel it and do stuff with it. I hate the fucking midichlorians. I cannot believe, from my understanding of what's happening at the end of this episode, that Dave Filoni, if anything, is going to lean more heavily into explanations of the Force and the origins of the Force. And how, and I'm like, who the fuck came out of the disaster sequel trilogy and said, you know, the one thing we need is more Force explanations?
Yeah. Sounds great.
Anyway.
So we start off with the cargo transfer. It's complete. They can leave. Mm-hmm. They can go up to orbit. They can dock with the Scion. They can
huge internet points for the guy
out of here.
The guy 3 weeks ago that called that they're going to dock this just like a Jedi starfighter, because that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, which is cool, except they dock it in the wrong fucking place. So instead of going to orbit, they begin locking the Eye of Scion into place around Thrawn's ship right there at the tower. He sends two fighters out to distract and or kill Ahsoka. Thrawn thanks the Great Mothers, and they reward Morgan with the Gift of Shadows, which is this Blade of Talzin.
Here's the thing. I think I would have been mollified if Morgan had said, we can begin the docking procedures if you just take the Chimera into orbit, and Thrawn be like, I would love to, but we are so critically low on fuel, the Star Destroyer literally can't make it. And that adds, like, tension, that, like, Thrawn knows the obvious smart thing to do. He's unable to do it. But since they don't mention that, it makes it feel like that it just doesn't occur to Thrawn.
Yes.
And it's like, it makes me think
back to... Are you so critically low on fuel that you can't back away from this tower?
And here's the thing. I actually think this was a thing that, like, Dave Filoni got caught out on. Because remember when we said, Morgan said that she called for a shuttle to take them to the Eye of Scion, and now suddenly the Eye is landing on the planet to pick them up? I bet that at some late hour in a writer's room, someone said, discovered, like, well, why the fuck isn't the thing? Oh, well, we'll go back and make the thing so it seems like that's just what you got to do. But that's insane. We know Star Destroyers can go into orbit of planets. We've seen it a million times.
Of course.
Like, the only possible reason, and again, there's a hit, you could handcanon it, but I just,
well, you
I can't explain to people why headcanon things are like the worst. Like, you can resort to that to get to the very last mile of a plot that you really enjoy. Like, there's a lot of things like the Matrix and stuff. Like, eventually you'll get to a level where you have to make a leap in logic. Or you have to trust the universe. But, like, I feel like this show asks me to do it every 5 fucking minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. And even if you want to grant them, okay, yeah, there's a fuel problem, you know, it's critical, back the fuck up 1,000 yards, 4,000 yards, 8,000, 12,000 yards, back the fuck away from that tower, and there's zero chance they get in.
Right. There's no, once you're loaded, there is zero reason to stay there.
Yeah. It's idiotic on Thrawn's part to stay there.
Yeah.
And it gets worse. It gets even fucking worse as this episode goes on. Like, that's not the most egregious thing, that he doesn't just move the ship. I was trying to give him credit. I'm like, okay, these TIE fighters are just a distraction to slow down Ahsoka as they head into orbit, right? Because they've got this ship. Maybe they might chase them up there. Once they get rid of that ship, once they ground the Jedi shuttle, it's like, dude, you're just an idiot.
And that's the thing. Like, as far as I'm concerned with Thrawn, he talks about his dwindling numbers, which, yeah, I get it. But, like, you have to have the expectation that when you return to the Star Wars galaxy, you're going to have some kind of industrial complex behind you. And I think they're setting that up fine with the Imperial remnants penetrating the shipyards, and the fact that they could build this giant fucking hyperspace ship. Like, Thrawn will have resources when he gets here. So why are you being stingy at the 11th hour? Unless you literally only have two. Like, this is no longer a situation of like, well, you know, I might need to have some forces in reserve, so I'm going to send the bare amount. It's because I'm saving it for this moment. This is that moment. Do you literally only have two fucking TIE fighters?
No, we see a lot
more
than that.
Because this is the only thing that can stop you, man. And as soon as you get back to Star Wars Galaxy, you are one fucking beat up Star Destroyer against the entire New Republic fleet, which we see at the end of this episode.
No amount of TIE fighters will help you. Yeah.
So what are you holding in reserve, you dumb blue motherfucker? Like, it's just so that you can barely believe that Sabine can win a little bit of victory. Like, it's just to continue the dance of this episode. It's dumb.
And it undermines the character. Like, they're trying to establish this character as a tactical genius who wins against all odds.
And the dialogue is so good.
I don't believe it.
I loved when he said, I've watched many Imperial officers make the same assumptions about the rebellion. Even I have fallen victim, and I'll never let it happen again. But watch me let it happen again as I send two fucking TIE fighters.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Hold on a second. Complement of TIE fighters in a Star Destroyer.
Oh,
let me
God.
Google something.
Hundreds,
real quick.
Thousands.
Standard complement is 72 fighters. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Does he really only have two fighters left after what? 5 years, 6 years in exile?
I'm pretty sure we see more than that in the hangar bay.
He's holding them for when it really gonna matter. He's holding them back for when it's really going to matter, Jim.
Maybe he's doing something to Dathomir where he needs his other 70 fighters. I don't know.
What do you think about this witch shit?
Dude, witch shit sucks. I don't like witch shit on the best of days. I really don't like it on Star Wars Day. I think witches and zombies are the worst thing to happen to Star Wars in my lifetime. They're worse than midichlorians. They're worse than the Clone Wars. They're worse than the sequels. I just fucking hate it. It's not Star Wars.
And I honestly don't mind. Like I said, I don't mind other Force traditions. Like, I don't mind people calling themselves witches and they have a different understanding of Force and they channel it differently. But, like, it shouldn't unlock whole other abilities because, like, the Force, as I understand it, is fully explored between the Jedi and the Sith. Like, you got the lightning, you got this, you got that. Maybe you can do some extreme stuff where you can, like, apparently generate a whole human out of it. When I talk about this, it's like, okay, well, maybe I'm being too harsh, or maybe you can conjure a blade out of pure Sith magic or whatever, and maybe the Force sometimes look like green smoke instead of blue lightning and stuff. It's just like,
then what's the point of Kyber crystals?
I don't know. It's just another thing of like, we can't imagine Star Wars without lightsabers. So this independent Force using sisterhood has to have a lightsaber blade, or how could they possibly fight Jedi?
And it just
looks and feels stupid. I think it just looks and feels really stupid.
You're not supposed to be able to fight Jedi. That's the thing. You're not supposed to be able to fight Jedi as mere mortals. That's how it always was in Star Wars. Jedi are a fucking force of nature. They are to be reckoned with.
Sith witches. I think they can fight with the Force. I think they can fight with the Force.
Absolutely.
I just don't think they need a lightsaber. They could have, like, they could just use the pure Force, you know?
Well, we need to stop trying to make something cooler than lightsabers, too, because you can't. You cannot do it. The lightsaber is the coolest form of sword that has ever been created. Let's just face it. 40 years ago, Lucas said, I've got this idea, and it was the best idea. Let's just stop trying to make dark sabers and Dathomir witch sabers and shit like that. Let's just stick with the coolest form, the
lightsaber.
Sabers
and I'll go. I think that Dave Filoni revealed himself as something else, and that is an unrepentant weeaboo. The ultimate perfected dark side blade is a fucking katana.
No,
and like he's gonna sprinkle Ronin in another like Japanese like we got Boken. Oh, I love Boken, by the way. Now if you go through Wikipedia, every fucking post New Republic Jedi is now referred to officially as a Boken Jedi, even though this is just some asshole Jedi that is just making an offhand remark about his opinion of the quality of post-Temple Jedi. That's now an official fucking term? that's been applied to all, like, oh my god, this fandom.
What if he called her a stupid Jedi?
That's what I'm saying. Like, what if he called her?
Update Wikipedia with every Jedi after the era of the Republic. Ezra Bridgers,
one of those poopy pants Jedis. They can't hold a candle. Ezra Brett Poopy Pants Jedi hyperlinked to the one time to some. It's just so stupid. It's so fucking stupid, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't. I can't have this in my yard. I'm sorry. I can't have. It's not even like it's the lack of critical thought into the lore. As a person that loves lore, it's the lack of critical thought that's going into the lore that just really pains me.
Maybe I was putting too much critical thought into it, because at this very first scene, this is where I'm starting to question everything I've seen before. Why do the Great Mothers give a shit about Thrawn? What is he doing? This has been the mystery all season long. What is Thrawn doing with this cargo, with these witches? What is the fucking point? And they never get to it in the entire series.
There's reasons, but they're not going to tell you. And what is Baylan doing on this planet? There are reasons, but they're not going to tell you. Yeah. What is Shin doing now?
Mysteries. These are the biggest mysteries of the entire season. And they don't even reveal... They don't reveal anything about them. They are in the same state now as they were then.
This is the key to hack writing. This is why, and I smell this, because I got taught this lesson by X-Files and Lost very early in my television writing career. It's fine to have ongoing mysteries. It's fine to ask new questions at the end, you know, to keep people on the hook. It's not cool to not have any answers at the end of a whole season. It's not cool to get zero answers and more questions asked.
Not even to deepen the mystery. That's the thing that's most egregious here. With Baylan, they did nothing. They did not deepen the mystery at all. I know exactly as much about Baylan's plot as I do in episode one.
And it's a shame, because I love Darth Swanson. Darth Swanson's fucking rad. And it already was sad on the face of it that we're going to lose Ray Stevenson forever, so they're going to have to recast him or do something wild, do some Dathomir witch, you know, CG bullshit or something. But the fact that it's not that Ray died in the middle of filming and they had to desperately go to this, because what are we to do? He died 5 months after filming completed. This is how they intended to leave things. And it's just I don't know, man. To me, this is the hallmark of hack, fly by the seat of your pants, committee.
It's the hallmark of the Disney business model. That's what it's a hallmark of. It's the hallmark of set up the next thing as much as possible so we can hook people and force them to watch the next movie, the next series. It's the Marvelification of everything on the Disney side.
Well, it's worse than that, because remember when we said, I hope, 5 years ago, we're like, I hope the Star Wars learns from the Marvel side, where you kind of got to start things slow and you got to do that. If anything, the Marvel side has forgotten how to do things, because they're fucking up making things compelling and connecting things and, you know, taking your time to do things right. Because I heard the Secret Wars was I got a little bit of that on the Midnight Boys shows, that was extinction level fan event. How bad that series was, and how bad especially the finale was. And that's the other thing that they pointed out that I haven't really realized, is all of these shows, sometimes they have a decent, sometimes they have a decent story, sometimes they have a decent season, but they almost all have terrible finales. And the one that I can think of is Loki. Loki's the only thing that didn't that had a finale that didn't kind of land like a wet turd.
Yeah, I feel
problem.
Like it's it's probably because they're trying to set so much other stuff up with those finales and hook you into watching them. I mean,
cliffhangers are supposed to hook people and make people desperate to see what comes next, and they're having the opposite effect. So,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, that business model of we're going to make just as much as people can possibly bear at this pace is doomed, it looks like. I mean, you have, in order to create something compelling for fans, you have to have time to create it. You have to have passion. You have to have the space to make something truly great. And when you are forcing, a schedule 10 years in advance with, different phases of the thing and saying we have to hit these milestones, product be damned, you're going to end up with shit like this, where it's poorly thought out and ill-conceived.
is there's not really a Star Wars project planned for the next like year or year. And with the writer strike too, they have time to course correct. It's just like, what I'm saying is this feels like season 5, season 6 The Walking Dead, where it's like I'm starting to collect enough information where there is technically time for them to turn this around and to like salvage, because there's a lot of good elements in the season. I just don't think they will, because I don't think they know. I don't think they've correctly diagnosed the problem from my perspective. So it feels like this thing's going to be doomed to be nichier, only for more and more obsessive fans, and that's just not a recipe for mainstream success. Which means they'll probably stop doing it eventually.
Well, they've already shut down the movie arm of Star Wars. I know they're talking about spinning it back up. Filoni himself is probably going to get.
That's what I'm saying.
They had their fucking shit can. Their movie plans because of how terrible this stuff was and how much the fans hated it. They're on the same trajectory with their television stuff. Their series are so bad. Between Book of Boba Fett and the way that this plays out and Obi-Wan, I mean, they need to shut down TV production too and go back to the drawing board with this stuff. Ask Gilroy to do some more shit so that we can actually get a series that people care about.
Or maybe the lesson is you just can't do Avengers. You can't do fucking Endgame like every 10 years. Like, or if you do, you need to take a break. Like, maybe this stuff needs to just develop a new IP and come back to Star Wars in a couple of years when people have like kind of gotten hazy about how bad you shit the bed last time. You know, you've already recouped your $2 billion or $4 billion investment on this thing. Come on now. Like,
oh yeah.
Like it's like a field. You got to let it lie fallow a little bit for the creative juices to build back up in the soil. You're just extracting and extracting. It's going to blow away. It's going to turn into a barren desert.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. The problem is that they have shareholders who are out there saying, plant those fucking crops we want to harvest.
Yeah.
And if they're not planting as many and in fact more crops and harvesting as much or more than they did last quarter, the shareholders are going to abandon them and their whole business is going to eventually crumble.
It's actually illegal not to extract maximum at full.
In America.
It's like it's a violation of your fiduciary responsibility to your shareholders. So like it's in a, we're in a bad spot, you know?
We might be in a bad spot with this podcast. That's scene one. Wait, we've talked for 20 minutes about it. Let's move on.
Okay.
Let's move on to another scene. We can talk 20 minutes about. Ezra constructs a lightsaber. Let me say that again. Ezra, Force Monk, now disavowed lightsaber user, constructs a new lightsaber for himself. Hu Yang claims that he taught Ezra's master to build a lightsaber and helps him find the components he's looking for. Ezra asks what he's missed between Sabine and Ahsoka, and Hu Yang fills him in. What happened to the Force Monk stuff? I thought this man didn't need a lightsaber, and in fact, preferred not to use a lightsaber.
I think, I don't know, because like I thought that was what they're going for too, but apparently he's like, okay, well, the Force Monk's fine, but we're going to assault the whole Star Destroyer. I better have a lightsaber, which, but yeah, I don't
know. So he
know
lost
why.
Faith during that battle? He was like, oh, yeah, no, I almost got my ass kicked there with this Force Monk stuff. I should get back to the saber business.
He's like, I don't know, like thinks that Sabine can know. Like I said, this episode makes all the other episodes a little bit worse. And I kind of thought the Force Monk thing was cool. It was if you have to do Jedi, having different classes of Jedi would actually be kind of cool. Maybe you could have some, you know, take some, get some different Force classes. You got the Jedi protectors that can like do shields and stuff. You got the Jedi monks who are hand-to-hand combat specialists. But I guess not. That was just a one-time thing.
Okay. They didn't really make that clear until he's in the middle of constructing a saber.
Hu Yang's talking about how like Ahsoka thought that training Sabine would be dangerous, and it has turned out to be dangerous, but we're not going to do anything with that. We're not going to acknowledge that it's going to be like Ahsoka was wrong to think that, and now she's gotten over it.
Yeah. I mean, I like that we get a little bit more backstory on that. Like, well, that was one of the big questions, right? Why did Ahsoka stop training Sabine? And do get an answer here, but I don't know that it's wholly satisfying.
Yeah, because it's not apparently going to pay off, or it's going to anti-pay off. Which, let's get to the next scene. This is leading right into there.
Yeah, Sabine and Ahsoka talk about how they got into this situation. Sabine apologizes, and Ahsoka lets her off the hook because Anakin always had her back. Ahsoka says she'll always have Sabine's back, and then they get attacked by two TIE fighters, which Sabine takes out, crashing Ahsoka's ship in the process.
I was so close to thinking that Ahsoka, I was like when this conversation started up, like, oh my God, they're going to take this like gentle parenting track with Ahsoka, where it's not like, I think as a parent, your job when you're a kid, especially when they get to be teenagers, when they fuck up, isn't to be like, you fucking dumbass piece of shit, I can't believe you had your head so far up your ass, you did something so fucking stupid that you did. It's to be, you know, the kind of like more guidance, and like, you should always be in their corner, but sometimes, you know, you'll have to be like, hey, you're not going to get a punishment, but there are going to be consequences, and it's not even going to be coming from me, it's going to be coming from like the cops, or the, you know, the you're going to get kicked out of her apartment if you can't, if you party too much and tear shit up. And like, I thought she was going towards there. It's like, oh, you must be very pleased. Your gamble paid off. And when she started showing contrition, I thought she'd lean into that to be like, you know, I'm glad we got Ezra back, and that's a good thing. But if we don't stop Thrawn, there's going to be severe consequences, and these are things we're going to have to deal with, and it's going to disrupt the Force, and like something. And it's like, I think the only consequence we might get is whoever that douchebag Imperial Senator is going to grandstand about how, oh, I got your son back. But he's going to be seen as the bad guy. He's going to be seen as an asshole. And if I was, you know, my skull will split open and I'll die when that happens. I just don't know. I don't know. No, I do know. This is garbage. This is bad storytelling.
Agreed. And it's worse at the end of the scene. Like, when Sabine comes up after taking out these two TIE fighters at the cost of their only mode of transportation that could possibly catch Thrawn and says, got him. I'm like, somebody slap this idiot. At what cost?
I guess I didn't mind that, because to me, it's like they were sacrificing a ship to save Denodi. And I'm like, okay, that's fine.
Shit about the Noti.
If you're going to sacrifice the galaxy for Ezra, the least you can do is sacrifice it for these poor innocent native people. Okay, I'm on board with that. But yeah,
also, okay, I know what the apologists are going to say, but why are we traveling at 4 miles per hour when Thrawn is about to take off and the fate of the galaxy is at hand? Here.
Is there something wrong with Ahsoka's ship going into this?
No. The reason that they are, and they say this in the episode, is Ahsoka said earlier when Ezra's constructing his lightsaber, he tells Hu Yang, Ahsoka said we'll leave as soon as everyone's ready. And so he's frantically rummaging around for parts trying to construct his lightsaber to make himself ready. They cannot fly to their destination while he's looking for parts. The guy who just an episode ago was saying, I don't need a lightsaber, now suddenly is holding up a galaxy-wide consequential fight so that he can construct a weapon he doesn't need.
I just assumed that I had forgotten that Ahsoka's shuttle was damaged in the transit process, or like through the mines or something, and it was like something that they hadn't quite got the engines going again. Really?
No, it's damaged here at the beginning when the TIE fighters shoot it.
Well, I mean, I know that then it stabilized, so it can't even hover at that point. But I thought there was something making. So if there's, I mean, I don't know. I guess if truly there was nothing wrong with that ship, like, it'd be, maybe their plan was to take the Noti along with them as some kind of Ewoks, like a really incompetent, weak Ewoks.
Then get them
like,
on board and go, man. Load that cargo and get the hell out of here.
I don't. That's okay. That's even stupider, I guess. More stupid.
Yeah. So they can give an opportunity to the guy who doesn't need a saber to build one. Doesn't make any sense. All right. Thrawn gets the report of the TIE's engagement with Ahsoka's ship. Seeing that they're grounded, he decides he needs to prepare for a ground assault as the Jedi ride towards Thrawn's ship.
You know, if you would have sent half a wing of TIE fighters out, Thrawn, I think there would have been zero chance. And like, again, this is... He's saying all the right things. This is a sick thing to do. If he was actually doing smart things and Ahsoka was countering him because she's just such a badass Jedi. But he's just like taking all these fucking, like Mike the Mantrout from Breaking Bad to come up here and be like, this is a bunch of half measures, Grand Admiral. What the fuck? Do you even care? Do you want to take off from this planet with the Night Sisters bullshit in tow? I don't know that he does. And also, Wes Chatham, everybody. One of my favorite character actors from The Expanse. Mm-hmm. Hidden behind his gold-faced asshole suit. Love it. I love it. And I love that. But if I stick with this series, but to see his face, I almost guarantee it's going to be a snarling zombie at this point.
Yep. Yep. For sure. I don't know. This is where the episode really just like falls apart for me. Thrawn needs to back the fuck away from this tower and stop any chance of a ground assault. If you want to stop a ground assault, a great place to do that is in the sky. Go to the sky.
Yep.
That's how I stop ground assaults.
I wonder how many Imperial shuttles, I wonder how many complements of Imperial shuttles the Star Destroyer have. Like, you could just go to orbit and like load up the fucking coffins and shit with that way too. But like, yeah, I can't think of a single, you're right. Even if they're low on fuel, just back the fuck up. Back the fuck up. Can a Jedi force jump a mile?
Nope.
I don't think so.
Three Jedis could probably chain their force jumps to where they could jump, what, 12 football fields? That's my guess. That's based on what I saw, like 12 football fields, but two of them would die. They would plummet to their deaths.
They can keep each other in the air long enough for their double jump to reset, then they just keep on chaining it infinitely.
Yeah,
there's like a 5-second timeout.
There's a cool down.
for their alt jump ability.
Yeah, it's stupid. Anyway, Thrawn spots the Jedi incoming and rains hellfire on them. They manage to ride through it and enter the gate to the tower to Thrawn's ship. And the Night Troopers are dispatched. The Jedi cut them all down, but the Great Mothers reanimate them. I hate this. I hate zombies in Star Wars. Zombies, fuck you.
I know there's some dark, like there's been some dark book lines that like deals with like kind of Star Wars horror, and I think that's fine to explore in little like side corners and stuff. But like, and it, like, I wouldn't even mind if these are reanimated stormtroopers, like through some kind of like force power. It's just the way they were conceived, where they're literally Walking Dead zombies in stormtrooper armor. Like they do to.
I don't like it conceptually, but yes, the depiction of it in particular is offensive.
Like, imagine they were just like automatons, and they were just like, they didn't make any noise, they weren't moaning like zombies, they didn't have a rotted face, they were just like soulless machines or something. Like, I think that would have been an interesting take if they were, you know, like better somehow, even, because now they got their full faculties, but they're invincible. But maybe they, like, I don't know, they don't have like I'm saying, like, it just seems like there's a better way than just literally Walking Dead style zombies in stormtrooper armor. It just felt real dumb, and it didn't feel like Star Wars. And also, how many of Thrawn's troops are dead now?
All of them, I assume. They're all dead.
But then what is the volunteer process? They're all dead, why hasn't Ezra ever seen this? In fact, what the fuck has Ezra and Thrawn been doing on this planet the whole time? Has Thrawn spent any effort to track him down and kill him?
Apparently not. Otherwise, like, how he'd often probably be able to, considering he's just like a day's walk away. And
yeah,
he has
like
a map that can pinpoint him.
I hear that the Marauders are a threat. I never hear about, well, you got to watch out for the Imperial patrols. They're the real motherfuckers in this thing. Like, I don't understand. It doesn't feel like 5 years have really elapsed, or however many years has really elapsed for these people.
I think it's like 10. I think it's a long ass time.
And even then, it's like, should Thrawn's shit be this busted up? You look at the stormtrooper armor, it looks like these guys, like, in, you know, like, do they just roll, like, does Thrawn have them rolling around in the dirt, like, three shifts out of the day? Like,
how do you crack a piece
have you been
of
fighting
armor plating that with that regularity, right? Like, in 10 years, every single piece of armor is going to be cracked to bits.
Are you fighting constant wars against Ezra Bridger's one-man defender of the Noti? And he's just like this... Like, he just slowly ground down your forces. Like, you might be running low on supplies and stuff, but why is your shit all scuffed? Like, and that's the thing. I thought this Kasugi stuff was really fucking cool, but now that the story is shit, I'm starting to really double think. I'm starting to question everything.
Right, right. Here's the thing that I really don't like about the zombies and the magic. Star Wars to me has always been a sci-fi series with the addition of a slight hint of magic, right? Like a sprinkle of magic. It's been like the Force users are extremely rare, and they can do impressive but not otherworldly things, you know, they can read your mind a little bit. They can jump higher. They can run faster. They're able to like sort of kind of predict your moves a little bit ahead of you. And that has just been blown the fuck open in Star Wars. Star Wars is now a fantasy series with a little bit of sci-fi in it. And
yeah,
it's just not the TV I like. I'm not a fan of the fantasy genre. I'm a fan of the sci-fi genre.
Right.
And they have totally flipped the script on Star Wars.
And I think the Force can do
just about anything. And I'm a fan of zombie genre, too. I will say I'm a fucking zombie lover. I love this shit. I've seen hundreds of zombie movies. It's not the zombies I hate in concept. It's their use in this thing that I thought was something else.
And I'm a little bit more lenient. I think the Force can do anything, but it can't do anything all the time. It has to be like once in a movie can you throw the Force theme and have some kind of big meaningful moment, and like where Vader summons the strength to throw the Emperor into a chasm, or Luke summons the strength to sacrifice himself rather than turn to the dark side, or you can guide a photon torpedo into a fucking exhaust port. But like all the fucking time it's just a win button. Especially when you're in completely artificially constructed situations that you had complete control over, you know?
Yeah. I don't know, man. They have so eroded the Jedi that they're just now another faction in Star Wars that isn't nearly as impressive or mysterious as they used to be.
And also, simultaneously, they're the only faction that matters. Everyone has to be a Jedi or they're just not as cool, you know?
And they can't stand up to the Jedi, yeah. I mean...
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Sorry, get off my lawn. There's no zombies in my Star Wars.
Get these zombie fuckers off. Yeah, for sure get these zombie fucks off our lawn.
So we see some green smoke happening in this scene, which to me says that Murak was one of these zombies.
Who the fuck cares?
Reanimate. Yeah, right? Like, he never came back. I guess that was just a teaser to say zombies are coming.
Also... why did Shin react like this? She lost her best friend. We now know these zombies are a bunch of brainless fucks. Or maybe they, I don't know, maybe they're highly conscious, sensitive beings. They just can't communicate. It's like what we do in a shadow situation where like they just don't, they're just not coordinated enough to get anything beyond out of their mouths.
I always read her look there as being confused as what she was seeing. So that makes sense to me, but yeah.
Really? She didn't know she was working with a horrifying space zombie the whole time?
Yeah,
didn't feel
apparently.
Nothing off about the Force about this guy?
No, she's not very good with the Force. Anyway, Morgan says, hey, Thrawn, we can go now, dude. And he says, nah, if we go now, the Jedi might have time to get on the ship. We need to wait a little longer.
Yeah, yeah. Bring your ring down to me.
And then Morgan says, yeah, I understand. No, dude, he literally says, like, she says, okay, we're all loaded. Let's get the hell out of here. He's like, if we... He almost literally... This is almost word for word. If we leave now, the Jedi might have a chance to get on the ship at the pace they're going. We need to stay. We need to stay.
We need to buy more time, is what he says, yeah.
I don't understand this at all.
But Morgan does.
Morgan's like, I understand.
Yeah.
Morgan has literally misunderstood every single move that Thrawn has made this entire series, but now he trusts her that she understands. Beware the Sith. We will return. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues, but then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question, who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. First two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
Are you hearing voices too? Welcome back to Tribe of Two. The Jedi make their way up the tower, and they run into Morgan, who whips out her shiny new sword.
Whoa, you skipped the whole, like, Thrawn opening up the whole turbo laser fire, and they just casually ride through a whole Star Destroyer to the turbo, and then
was
all
a previous
three of them...
man. You're way behind.
We talk about them, like, all three riding and just reaching out with their hands to open a door, and how just, like... I didn't think we thought...
Jedi could do that. What's wrong with that? Jedi can move shit.
I mean, why even have the door closed? Like, if the real peril is riding over the field with turbo laser fire, why add the door?
I mean, why not add
why
the door?
Why add a huge door that, like, oh, one of them can't, but they all have three have to, like, reach out their hands? It just... I thought it looked dumb to have them all three. It looked... You know how, like, in The Matrix 4... Like, every single time, like, Carrie Ann Moss and Keanu Reeves are doing something, they essentially just hold their hand out and grunt, and that was, like, everything. Mm-hmm. Like, Lana Wachowski just didn't give a shit, because it's like, well, I guess if you want to murder my child, I might as well be the one that wields the blade, but I clearly don't give a shit about any of this stuff. Dave Filoni, this is supposed to be the stuff that he lives for, and we're getting, like, late-game Matrix 4, I don't know, Jedi sequences,
look,
whatever.
This is the stuff I buy... from a Jedi. I buy that they could predict where a shot's gonna land and avoid it. I don't have a problem with that part of the Jedi being, like, slightly psychic, mildly psychic. So I have no problem with them running through a field of blaster fire.
All right.
Now we get to the part where they run into Morgan. She whips out the sword. Ahsoka says, I'll handle it, sends Ezra and Sabine to stop Thrawn, and they all end up in battles. Why... doesn't Morgan care the two of these Jedi are just walking past her?
Dude,
isn't
Thrawn
she sent here
said,
to stop
the
Jedi?
Jedi? And the idea that the two zombie troopers wearing maybe Beskar armor, I don't know, it looked like they were wearing some kind of special thing, could stop two Jedi. And I guess Ezra is, like, kind of a considerable Jedi. He's, like, I guess a Empire Strikes Back Luke Skywalker level, maybe a little bit beyond.
Okay.
That's the thing. When I'm like, okay, she's going to leave. Maybe I thought, like, what was going to happen is Darth Shin and Swanson was going to show up. Grimes and Swanson was going to show up. When the two zombie troopers showed up, I'm like, oh no, the Jedi will have to go around them. What can even the strongest, most bulletproof zombie troopers, what can they do to stop a Jedi from going across around them over, like, a what? It's not a tight thing. There's no ceilings. They literally can force. Yeah. I'll see these motherfuckers force jump a quarter mile 5 minutes from now. But they are just completely stun locked by two zombie troopers with rifles.
Yeah.
How?
When we just saw them fight up a tower against 40 of these things.
These are special troopers.
Yeah, they're red and black.
Their faces, they've had a long time to master the art of being a zombie. And it's just like, I feel like Dr. Manhattan at the end of Watchmen. It's like, do you know what the world's strongest zombie poses a threat to a Jedi? It's as much as the world's strongest fucking termite. Like, no, they have no tools. They have no, like, if I was expecting them to like try to like just like, okay, fucking bully past them, and like maybe they would have like green lightning, they're like imbued at the dark side, so it's like, okay, yeah, Jedi can't just escape from them, but they just are brawlers, man. And yeah, and then you talked about the Morgan just letting them go past, like, oh, right. Well, these are the B tier Jedi. I can let the two zombies.
And
we haven't got
you?
The peak stupid yet. We haven't got the peak stupid. No. When it comes to this Morgan fight.
No, we'll get stupider. Let me throw some more stupid out there. Has it bothered you that throughout this entire series, we've never seen a Jedi run fast? In all these time critical circumstances, a Jedi has never ran.
Dude, have I brought it up like 17 times? Yes, it bothers me just a little bit.
I've seen Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon book ass through a ship before when there was some mission critical stuff happening. Come on, guys. You can run faster than these stupid howlers. Get on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Okay. I will say that, like, I know Jedi can do that. I think it's dumb. I'm kind of like, if they forget about force speed and they just make it non-canonical, that'd be cool. Because, like, it's one of those things where it's like, why don't they do it all the time? Like, they literally should do it all the time. Yeah. Every single time a Jedi has to get to some place, they should be fucking booking it. They should be using force speed to get there. Mm-hmm. Unless it's like, you know, anytime it's like a flashing light emergency situation, force speed. I just think they shouldn't just be able to do it. But
yeah, you might be right about that. But they've shown canonically that they can. So fucking do
agreed.
It.
Agreed.
Yeah. All right. Thrawn takes off just before the Jedi arrive. But Ezra manages to get on board using an assist from the former Mandalorian, now Jedi, Sabine. Sabine stays behind to help Ahsoka. Together, they kill Morgan.
Do you know what?
Let's talk about Sabine. Yeah,
I wanted to. Do you know what the funniest part about this scene? And I didn't pick it up until the Midnight Boys pointed it out.
What's that?
Sabine canonically has a full set of Mandalorian armor, including jetpack.
Including jetpack.
Including jetpack. Why the fuck would you pack all your armor and your blaster for an extragalactic mission and leave your jetpack behind?
She has a jetpack? Holy shit.
I think it's because Dave Filoni knows that he's going to need her to force jump, and she can have her whole Mandalorian armor, except it's just like, that is colossally stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. I did question that earlier in the series. I was like, why doesn't she use her jetpack? But then I thought, maybe she just doesn't have one.
Because not every Mandalorian does. Yeah, we haven't seen Rebels. We don't know. She fucking has a complete set, including jetpack.
Wow.
And she just didn't bring it. She just didn't bring it. I guess.
All right. Let's continue talking about Sabine then. She's suddenly discovered that, oh, actually my midichlorian count is way fucking higher than Hu Yang knew when he pronounced me the worst Jedi in history. It's way fucking higher than I knew, because now suddenly I'm able to grab this saber and then convince my friend, who's never seen me use the Force ever once in the history of our relationship, to jump to his death, and I will use the Force to save him.
Stakes are high, you know. Thrawn might get back in the galaxy if she doesn't.
I saw an explanation.
No hesitation to sacrifice Ezra to save the galaxy this time around, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she misses. He's dead. So I saw a write-up of this that was way better, that could have been actually important for character development and everything, all in this one scene for these two characters. And all you had to have happen was Ezra see her pull that lightsaber, and then him say, I'm gonna jump on this ship, boost me, and I'll pull you when I get up there, and her say, I can't do it, I'm not strong, and him be like, I believe in you.
Yeah, no, that'd be better.
From the other direction, this works 1,000 times better.
Yeah, but I still don't know that I buy that Sabine is this, like, she's, again.
I don't either. I 100% don't buy it, but that would have made it okay character-wise.
Like, here's the thing. Dave Filoni had a 10 out of 10 difficulty maneuver to take a character who is, it'd be like if Han Solo and the sequels were, hey, I'm going to, you know, I'm tired of you and the kid taking all the glory. I'm going to dabble in this Jedi bullshit. And, like, by the end of the movie, he can force jump and bring his lightsaber and force push other human beings like these impossible distances. Like, that would be dumb, right? That's like, that's a hard sell, because you're either force sensitive or you're not, you know?
In my mind, yeah.
I just think that they just really put the pedal to the metal on that.
It took a whole movie, right? It took a lot of time and dedication and training to get to the point where he could do this shit. With Sabine, it takes a moment of realization that if I don't do this, I'm going to die.
Her pulling the lightsaber to herself and killing that, I think that was the perfect level. That's like Luke in the Wampa cave. I'm in a life and death situation. I have to find Center, and I'm going to this is all I can do before I get the Yoda and start my training, right? The fact that she just goes from that, like, basic kind of like Boken Jedi move to, you know, lifting an X-Wing out of a swamp. And again, Luke Skywalker, the yes. Skywalker family, that's what they're known for. They're like yes. some of
they're
the strongest
highly
force users.
Attuned.
It's just, I thought
they're the
loved
ones
this
to
shit.
Bring balance to the fucking Force. Sabine's just right. a Mandalorian who's not even force sensitive. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Which, again, I don't know why the Mandalorian has to be a Jedi. Like, Mandalorians are super cool. They kill Jedi.
It's the rule of cool. Like, you know what's cool? A Mandalorian. You know what's cooler? Well, $1 billion.
Right.
I don't know, man.
The cool only rules if it's really, really cool. And this just goes to being stupid. The other question I had about the scene is, why do stormtroopers just watching?
I don't
like,
know.
It would be a lot. I think it would be a fundamentally more exciting scene if those stormtroopers like saw what they're doing and started opening fire. And it's like it increases the degree. But that's I don't know. Like, we're already five levels of stupid because this situation shouldn't have happened. This situation was engineered right. to make the situation happen, and the situation they made happen is the dumbest version of the situation.
Has Morgan?
But. They have John Williams theme music coming on strong and doing everything right. it can. There's not
and
enough
the
Johnny
laser
Williams
swords and yeah,
not enough Johnny Williams in the world for me to save this scene.
I should probably give this a pass. I think it's plausible. Although she's all about that Dathomir shit. I don't know why Morgan can fight so well. Like, she's doing spin kicks and twirls and flips and stuff like that when she's a Dathomiri witch. Like,
yeah, and Ahsoka handled her
do
ass.
Do they train to fight? I don't think these other witches could fight. I think you could walk up to them, and if their magic doesn't work on you, you could just cut them down in one blow.
Well, but their magic probably, that'd be like saying the same thing about the Emperor. If his magic doesn't work on you, you could probably cut him down. Well, his
yeah,
magic
but why isn't Morgan using
magic
in this scene then?
I don't
like,
know. That's
use
what
the Dathomiri magic, not the karate kicks you've learned as a Jedi in training.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. But like, they did establish her as being, that's the thing, they established her as being no match for Ahsoka back in Mandalorian season 2, wasn't it? And she did the spin kicks, and she had the Beskar spear and all that kind of stuff. So she's trained. I buy that, and she's super powered by the Dathomir witches. But it's like,
sure,
it's just stupid. It's also stupid to have like these stormtroopers come out to flank her and drive Ahsoka back, and then form a ring around them to let Ahsoka kill her. Like, why didn't the troopers just like continue to fire on her? Why is it only the heroes can help each other out? You know, like a zombie can grab Ezra and Sabine can come over there and save him, but like none of the villains will ever lift a finger towards helping the main villain out. Like,
I don't know. I mean, I could,
and it'd be one thing if Morgan's like, no,
yada, yada, you know.
I command you to stick back. I want to deal with this Jedi myself, but it's just stupid. It's just stupid.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they didn't want to hit Morgan. Thrawn decides to bombard the tower with Hellfire. Ahsoka and Sabine jump onto the opportunely timed arrival of Hu Yang in the repaired ship and follow Thrawn into space. Thrawn calls up Ahsoka and taunts her about Anakin's fate and then rolls space coal in her face as he jumps away into hyperspace.
He did a hyperspace burnout right in front of her.
Sure did.
Rolled hyperspace coal. That's funny. Man, and this thing is like they're writing Thrawn perfectly, but It's like if a complete moron told you this. Like if you're playing a chess game of chess with a moron and you just like fucking mated them in four moves and they're like, oh, you were a worthy opponent. Maybe you'll... It's like, it's so sick what he's saying, but he's so disappointing in actual practice. And I think he just looks so cool and he sounds so cool. And I'm really happy to Skarsgård guy's performance. It's just the writing. The writing is Saturday morning level. And the Thrawn's not a Saturday morning cartoon villain. God damn it. See, this is why I said you had to get off the fuck of my lawn. Because Dave Filoni's turned him into fucking... the Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget. Inspector Gadget's a goddamn moron, and he always beats Dr. Claw. So Dr. Claw must be a fucking moron, right? Yeah. That's drawn now.
See, you should have got off the lawn, and now you ruined the flowers.
This is what I was worried about. This is what I was saying. Oh, you can trust Dave Filoni. He's made 73 seasons of the best goddamn cartoons I've ever seen. Ah. Oh.
Why doesn't he shoot the ship instead of the tower? Like, if he's thinking one step ahead, don't be so reactionary to shoot the tower that they're currently on. Shoot the ship that they could use to catch you as you get away.
You
can detect
like
the ship because you do in this scene. You detect the fucking ship.
I'm going to tell... Yeah. I don't. Okay.
And you got a droid piloting it, not a Jedi.
Do you know how we've remarked this, that like anytime you got a TV series or a movie and it's about people making music and they have to have a hit song, almost always that song is like kind of lame because these Hollywood writers don't know how to write a hit song.
So if you're writing a tactical genius.
Yeah. Do you know what Hollywood writers have even less experience with? Any kind of tactics or strategy. And what I've like to me, we are in the period of time like in the 70s and 80s where you had action stars firing machine guns from the hips, blinking every single time the blanks went off. And this, like anyone with any actual experience in any of this stuff, it says, well, this is stupid. So what they do is they start hiring soldiers to do military consultants, and they're getting like the mechanics down. But I think the next evolution in like mind blowing plotting is going to be like someone's going to get a retired lieutenant colonel from the army and be like, you're probably a Star Wars fan, right? You're an aging Gen Xer, you're retiring from the army. You probably know about Star Wars. What would you do in this situation with this force and against this opposition? And I bet they'll come up with some cool ass shit, and it'll probably cost them a nickel compared to all this CGI shit. But until then, we're gonna get what a Hollywood writer thinks is good military tactics and strategy. And it's dog shit. It's dog shit.
Ask that general, how would you react to the Holdo maneuver? And that general will say, well, you got to change everything about the universe because this fundamentally changes the nature of warfare in that universe.
Right.
So
you're
all
telling
the ships
me
would be, yeah.
That for in 10,000 years of hyperspace, no one has thought to take a smaller vessel and ram it to a big vessel. Like, really?
Right.
Really? Wow. I think we, us humans, 6 seconds after we learn how to float a boat, we rammed it into some other nation's boat. Like, come on. There's a lot of retired colonels out there that would love to consult on a Star Wars show.
The witches in this scene, I feel like they don't like what Thrawn is doing in this. He says, rain hellfire down on this tower or this temple or whatever they've got. And they're like, dude, that's our holy place. What the fuck are you? But they don't say anything. They just kind of let it go. But there's a look.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like there is some uneasy alliance, and I'm sure there's going to be some kind of betrayal. But I don't even know what the fuck they're doing. I don't know why.
Right.
I don't know why these people worship Thrawn. I don't know how they found them. I don't know why they're so intensely allied. And I feel like I should at this point. So it's like, okay. Yeah, I thought the same thing. Like, you're just going to destroy
the
whole site. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I think it's almost... I think it's almost certain we'll get a season two at some point down the line, but like...
Yeah.
Yeah, at the end of this series, theoretically, we should be knowing a lot more about this than we do. I would say stranding Ahsoka and Sabine here is the only thing I do like about this episode. If you want to say there were consequences to be paid, I guess... That's it.
Man,
but I'm almost certain they're going to undo it in the future.
Some guy on Twitter took exception to me because I was complaining about it. It's like, apparently she's not going to take any consequences. It's like, well, that's a Star Wars thing, dude. Like, how much consequences did Luke face when he defied Yoda and Obi-Wan and put the fate of the galaxy in danger? And I'm like, the dude lost his hand, found out his dad was Space Goebbels. Mm-hmm. Goebbels, his master and his both of his masters and mentors abandoned him, said you get no more, and he called out to them and they didn't come because they said, mm-hmm. this is your shit man. His best friend got frozen in carbonite, like, yep. Yeah, eventually he won, but that was a real fucking smack on the ass for Luke Skywalker with newspaper. Sabine got a clap on the shoulder and an attaboy from her master. Like, mm-hmm. she's not going to experience, like... like I said, Ezra sacrificed his life to stop Thrawn, and she single-handedly undid it. And he's, like, too happy-and-go-lucky out of a character to ever, like, have a problem with it. And it's just sad.
Well, he doesn't know, too. That's the thing. It never came up in their conversation.
Oh,
she
God,
always averted
yes.
that topic. Here's the thing about Luke. Luke learned and changed from those experiences. Sabine has not done any of that.
He was a much different person. In
completely different at the beginning of Return. Yeah. So it's fundamentally different. It's fundamentally different the way that they treated Luke Skywalker versus Sabine.
And it's like, yeah, it is something interesting that they've completely reversed positions, that they're stranded. And like, and I also wonder, like, you know, have they really thought this through? Because like, if there's going to be a rescue, I want to see them deal with that minefield. I want the fleet to jump in the middle of minefield and instantly take like 90% losses. But I bet they don't. I bet they just try real hard to triangulate the location of the galaxy and build a big hyperspace jump and just come and pick them up. Or they'll have the whales come and rescue them. Even though why the fuck would the whales ever come back to this place to help the Jedi? I just don't care. Like, man, like the last few weeks we've been so engaged, and I thought that I was really looking forward, because, like, you know, I've been talking a lot of shit about the Yard stuff, but Ahsoka's been going pretty well, and I thought that there'd be really fun about, like, okay, well, how are they going to solve the Darth Swanson thing, you know, with the Rey? But like, the death of their star is the least of their fucking problems, believe it or not. Like, we haven't even gotten
the shameful
into,
part
like,
is it's all in service of setting up the next thing that they want to make money on. That's the shameful part of it. They could have told a story here that had answers to some of the mysteries and opened new doors of mystery. And instead, they want to keep you on the hook for the next thing, for Filoni's movie, for the next season of Mandalorian, for whatever they're doing.
Yeah, and it's just very, like, I think Filoni huffs his own farts because some of this stuff, because I remember, like, many times people would send in feedback about, like, you know, explaining the way between worlds, and they're like, it's also about, but almost everyone said, like, you know, I can't see Dave getting too far in the weeds with his force spirit wolves and his force god this and the dark side son and the light side sister and the father to main, and it's like, that just wouldn't work in live action. Motherfucker's doing it. He's doing it. He's doing it. So I guess it's going to look goofy as hell. We'll see. I did not walk away from the Star Wars sequel experiment thinking the one problem is I need to know how the Force works. I need to know that there's gods and goddesses ruling over the Force part of the galaxy. And
sure, I guess so. All right. So can Sabine go back to the Noti? And Shin goes to the bandits, and Baylan surveys the land from a giant statue. I think it's a statue of himself. It looks remarkably like Baylan. I know it's not, but it's
that
hilarious.
Is the father. Yeah, no, but he found the northern border of the Jedi Kingdom of Gondor, apparently he's going to try to throw the map artifact into the crack of Mount Doom next season. I saw someone on Reddit say, like, I don't understand why people are complaining about the red. Like, this is it's just as exciting as Sam and Frodo heading off to Mordor. I'm like, I fucking knew what Sam and Frodo were trying to do and what the stakes were. Mm-hmm. Like, can you imagine the Fellowship ending if you had no idea that they're on a mission to destroy the ring?
And what lies ahead? The dangers they're going to face. Like, I know all of it.
Oh, man.
That's the stakes. Yeah. That's the emotional investment. Here, it's nothing. I don't even know why he's here.
Yeah. Do not neglect your training. We'll be right back.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun fan favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
Let's see what knowledge lurks inside this podcast. Here's more Tribe of Two. Can we talk about the Darth Grimes ending? What the fuck is up with her giving the Fantastic Mr. Fox salute to these nomad people? She was promised her position in the Empire.
Uh-huh, but Baylan then said, I'm letting you go, and I don't know that Thrawn's gonna honor that, and Morgan's a witch now. She can't know any of this, but, like, I don't know. Why wouldn't she just go back to the ship?
I don't know either.
Because she, like, lost, and she's worried that Thrawn's gonna punish her?
I don't know. But, like, I guess she's just happy to rule over these people, I guess.
I guess.
And they're gonna be happy to follow her, I guess. And
yeah, I don't know. She'll have to pretend to be a witch, speak to them in terms that they understand, I guess.
Yeah.
Then Thrawn arrives at Dathomir. Again, we have no fucking idea why. We don't know what the stakes are.
Are these coffins full of Dark Mothers? Are these coffins full of force-repelling salamanders? Are these coffins full of just Thrawn's troops that have died that he plans to reanimate? I don't care. Because there's no way he's going to adapt the Aerithin Empire in any way that's going to make me happy. There's no unless they completely refactor shit in the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. I don't have the faith.
And then Ezra reports back to Hera. Kind of, I guess, steals one of Thrawn's Imperial shuttles and flies it back.
I think it's actually Baylan's shuttle. That was, like, the one that we started the series with.
It's really? Because like it looks all shuttle. Fucked up. It looks like it's been repaired like Thrawn's ships have.
It had very distinctive red markings that I think were supposed to look like Jedi Counselor ship is what I, you know, because that was like the whole, but I thought it was too, but someone pointed out in one of the very lore accurate podcast I listened to, they pointed out it was Baylan shuttle, which made, I guess, a little sense that, like, but I'm also thinking, like, I don't know, I guess I believe in Star Wars. In the heat of battle, you can throw on a stormtrooper suit and steal a shuttle and get out of Thrawn's spit and polish by the book Star Destroyer. I guess.
Here's what I don't understand.
After Ezra, he gets it,
Ezra spins, I don't know, a week in hyperspace with his helmet on. He comes down this ramp with his fucking helmet on. He puts his hands up in the air so they don't shoot him with his helmet on. He apparently never communicated with the ship to say, hey, don't shoot my Imperial shuttle that's incoming because I'm Ezra Bridger and I'm on it and I want to speak to Hera, my good friend. He fucking surprises them in an Imperial costume. That's the worst prank. That prank 9 out of 10 times results in death.
Dude, and for why? We knew it was Ezra. Uh-huh. Hera didn't know it was Ezra. But the thing about Hera not knowing it's Ezra is so you can pay off the friendship and the delight and the joy that her friend, like all the shit that's happened, at least I got a reunion. And
but they don't.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead just sits there like,
Ezra?
Like he's a mildly famous guy from the Rebellion and she's happy to have him back. Which, I mean, that's what I got from it. Maybe the Rebels fans got a lot more. Maybe they have that kind of understated relationship. But like, you wasted 30 seconds letting, you know, Chopper do the Lassie routine of being able to smell the Ezra-ness of him when you could have been spending that with, you know, a throne room celebration type scene where everyone's just jubilant that like Ezra is back.
Mm-hmm.
But, mm-hmm. You know, whatever.
I don't know. It was weird. And then we go back to the Noti camp where Ahsoka congratulates Sabine on a job well done. For some reason.
You did it. Like at the beginning of the episode, there was still the possibility they could stop Thrawn. And that's where I was holding on some thin hope that there would be some the prepare us for next season, that Ahsoka as the master would be like, there's going to be consequences and I still love you, but there's going to be a world of shit to deal with. And then we can't do anything about it. But no.
Yeah. And then Anakin's back there going, yes, well done.
You know what's so
my
funny?
Apprentice.
Cause I listened to a lot of podcasts and I think it was the Midnight Boys. Maybe it was another one pointed out. It's like, if Anakin's hanging out watching his masters and his family or his old apprentices and everything. So it's canon that Snoke seduced, Kylo Ren by kind of whispering to the Force, pretending to be his grandfather, Anakin Skywalker. Why didn't Anakin ever show up and be like, yo, grandson, don't listen to the Gat guy. He's fucking crazy. I redeemed my damn self. I threw this guy down a fucking well. Like, what? It's beshitting the existing canon. It was already pretty beshitted. So I thought that was pretty funny. The fact that Anakin's just chilling out, they'll figure it out. I'll buck up Ahsoka when she needs it, but my grandson, fuck him.
What were the shadows in the starlight? Am I supposed to understand what she's seeing here?
So Sabine is force strong enough to push a dude into low Earth orbit, but she's not force sensitive enough to see a force ghost, which I don't think requires you to be very force sensitive at all.
That's her, like, half-sensing Anakin?
Yes. Oh. Whatever that means.
Huh.
So, I'm assuming Anakin didn't want to be seen. Because, like I said, Obi-Wan can just whisper in Luke's ear in a cockpit. Like, when he's, like, 3 seconds into his Jedi career. He can appear to him in a frozen tundra when he's 6 minutes into his Jedi career. He can pop a squat on a log when he's 6 months into his Jedi career. Just any old force sensitivity and training level at all, but Sabine just straining her eyes to see what. And I think you're supposed to understand that Ahsoka actually sees Anakin, and Ahsoka's proof that Sabine's getting somewhere, this Jedi stuff. But man, you should have seen your girl when she was 15 minutes ago. I mean,
look, the unquestioningly. Easygoing master looking at the now unquestioningly easygoing master approvingly does not, in my mind, make it better that this decision was made.
Yeah.
On Sabine's part. Like, it doesn't help that Anakin, who, you know, Ahsoka is saying, yeah, he always stuck by me. He never questioned me. He always, like, just like I'm going to do with you. It doesn't help it, man. But I don't know. I mean, there is. Yeah, I don't like the way it turned out. They did tell. At least they told Ahsoka's story. At the very least. Because I was worried halfway through that they were going to pull a Mandalorian Season 2. Where half of it. Or, a Book of Boba Fett. Where half of it was Mandalorian Season 2.5. Mm-hmm. I was worried this was going to be a Sabine-only story at some point. Mm-hmm. And I think they brought it back around to, okay, this is an Ahsoka story, even if I don't care for how it turned out.
Yeah, I don't have like a huge, like, I honestly wouldn't have cared if they cut away from the Book of Boba to do Mando for an episode or two if the rest of Book of Boba was fine. Like, if things work, they work. It's just that none of this stuff is working. And like, I'm scared, man. Like, I cannot believe that we are with the Star Wars franchise where I felt like we were with the Walking Dead franchise, like in the sixth season.
Yeah.
Now, like, you can say what, and I said the same thing. Like, AMC's making way too much money on this to like skimp on the writing and the budget. And I don't know what the problem is, but like that times 10 times a million, honestly, for Disney. Mm-hmm. And like, I just don't know why we don't demand better. I really don't.
Well, Disney used
to be
known
for
quality.
There's people of all ages. I mean, there's people of all ages. There's also this phenomenon that like someone wrote about this week about, you a lot of times will see people who are not movie fans. They say they're movie fans, but they really only watch Marvel shit and maybe DC shit. And they have this wildly different experience with entertainment than the rest of us do, who are watching like, you know, like they got a full, like it's like the good Marvel stuff is really, really good. But like, if you have no other reference, if you're like 20 years old and all you've watched is like Marvel and Star Wars stuff and you've never engaged in anything deeper, then like, why wouldn't you think that like, well, why are these guys complaining? Like, it's got the best special effects I've ever seen. It's got all these cool force powers and it's got zombie stormtroopers. And it's just like, you have, it's like the 30-year-old guy who's eaten corn dogs and tater tots. Like, there's nothing wrong with corn dog and tater tots. I love corn dog and tater tots. But Jesus Christ, have a steak. Try a steak. Try some you know, steamed broccoli. Try some Korean food. Try a food truck taco. You challenge your taste buds a little bit, and then like you won't just want to eat corn dogs and tater tots the whole time. And I honestly think that's a big part of the pro Star Wars community is the people who just kind of don't know better. They're either kids or they have like that kind of palate. And you know, you're not a bad human being, but you are my enemy when it comes to enjoying good Star Wars.
Sure,
we're not on the same. We don't want the same things. We're not on the same side. So,
yeah, but I don't like, watch television to see cool things happen. I watch television to invest in characters and emotionally put myself in their place. And when things don't make sense, it's impossible for me to do that.
Yeah. Well, it's like I reminded of what that one dude said in Creator we just watched last week. It's like, you know, there's this two factional war, and one is like, do you know what happened to the other side if we won tomorrow? Nothing, because we just want to be we just want to enjoy this thing in peace. Mm-hmm. Yet the other side, if they win, they're going to destroy us. I feel like that about this uncritical Star Wars fans. It's like, if we get our way, you will still love Star Wars. I promise you. I promise you. Those Funko Pops will just look just as cool on your shelves. But the rest of us will not survive in this Star Wars environment. And there's not enough of you to keep a multi-billion dollar concern going. Like,
well,
it should give everyone a pause that Disney has essentially canceled all their Star Wars projects. Like, they're not going to do that too many more times before this Star Wars just gets put on the shelf for a while. And I lived through that era. I'll live through it again. Like, there's like a 15-year stretch of my life where like a Star Wars video game was a major event. We might head back to that, and maybe that's for the best. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Disney, like I was saying, Disney used to be known for quality. And they didn't pump out six movies a year. They pumped out one movie a year. If you were lucky, you'd get a Lion King, and then maybe the next you'd get an Aladdin. And like every one of those was as good or better than the last. And now everyone, and I'm not laying this at Disney's feet necessarily, but everyone in the current television and media environment is forced to create quantity over quality, because it's this huge this huge fight pile trying to get all of the eyeballs. And if you don't have something for those eyeballs to consume at every single turn, they're going to wander. And that is all that companies care about now. It's not about quality. If they can get quality and produce the quantity they need, great, but they are looking for quantity.
Yeah, I'm glad that we don't have a board of directors and 1,000 shareholders that are demanding us to do twice as many podcasts every year with the same amount of budget and personnel.
Absolutely.
Or you're even, it's just eventually, you're just pumped the well dry. And the thing is like, the shame is like, maybe Star Wars could, I think if they did everything right, you know, like we should be right now. And like, if they had done it like the Marvel way, we'd be right now, right in the thick of the Avengers part of the Star Wars storyline. Imagine that.
Sure.
Imagine we had a sequel trilogy where like 90% of Star Wars fans were engaged by it and thought it was satisfying. And then we want to know what's next with, you know, we got a whole generation of new Star Wars fans with Finn and Kylo Ren and Rey and it just like, no, that failed. And it's like, okay, well, we're going to do this other thing. And then that failed. And it's like, okay, now we're going to do this. They are just burning through people's time and attention and emotional engagement when we should be getting we should be building up to our end game on the Star Wars side. And they just shit the bed every single time they come up to one. They cannot lay down their head on a pillow without shitting that bed.
Yeah, man. And it's because they have to keep doing it. If they stop doing it for a second, somebody else is going to come in there and eat their lunch.
All right. Do we want to get some feedback? Because like we are going to come back for one more round of getting off our yard next week to wrap things up. Because I can already tell we're not going to be able to get through the stuff we got today. But if you'd like to send us feedback, StarWars@BaldMove.com is how you do it. Here we go. Chris DeCee is up saying, here's how they solve the untimely death of Ray Stevenson's Darth Swanson. Just have Nick Offerman play him going forward. You would never even know. I actually unironically think this is not a terror. This is a joke idea, but it's kind of not a joke idea because the secret is Nick Offerman's a really fucking good actor.
He's a great
actor. I think he could do every bit of the Balon except for the accent. But I think Nick Offerman on his A-game could do most of what he's doing here. So that's not a bad idea.
Another joke suggestion I saw that I love is get Jonathan Frakes to do it. He's got the same physical presence, though, you know, he's a little bit funnier, he's a little bit sillier, but like, you know, just tell him, look, Frakes, get in the suit and just like be you on like your worst day. Like you're not in the mood to joke, you're not having fun with anything, that's you now. And he would nail it.
We asked people for an Ahsoka timeline to better understand your character, and several people responded. I thought this was one of the more concise and insightful ones, and the earlier ones. George said, Ahsoka never officially finishes her training at the Jedi Temple with Anakin. She's very close, had an incredible amount of experience from the war, but she was framed for a crime by another Padawan, who eventually exposed and was arrested, clearing Ahsoka, but she left the Order feeling betrayed. She returned to Anakin literally right before the Revenge of the Sith, not to rejoin the Order, but to ask for aid from the Jedi to fight Maul on Mandalore, and is at the Siege of Mandalore during the events of that movie. She's on her way back.
Hold on. The Jedi couldn't like look into her mind and sense her emotions and understand that she didn't do it? How do you frame a Jedi?
That's a damn good question. Search your feelings. You know it to be true. The whole Jedi Order, maybe Palpatine was manipulating dark side stuff. Who knows?
Okay.
And plus, it's a cartoon.
She's framed by a Padawan, though, not a dark Sith master. But whatever.
She's on her way back after capturing Maul when Order 66 pops off, and she releases Maul to create a distraction while she removes Captain Rex inhibitor chip, and they all escape. After fighting the clones, she then reappears in Rebel Season 2 as Fulcrum. I guess it's a hidden identity. And she actually has a duel with Darth Vader, discovering his identity as Anakin in the process. So she doesn't even know post Order 66 until Season 2 of Rebels that Anakin is Vader. And I also, from other emails, I gathered that very few people in the galaxy know this. Thrawn is one of the few that suspect
sense.
It. I forget for there's some book series that explores that. But like that's why he's kind of knowing, like even though he shouldn't be in a position to, that's kind of where he kind of had all that goading he was doing of Ahsoka this episode. Let's see. We assume she was killed until then Season 4 of Rebels, where Ezra rescues her from her fate in the world between worlds. Ezra and Ahsoka both escape the world between worlds, and she reappears in the epilogue of Rebels, all while an all-white outfit start staring at Sabine in front of the mural of Lothal. This then brings us to live-action appearances in The Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett, and Ahsoka. In short, Ahsoka's never officially knighted as a Jedi. Anytime on screen has never been said she was. So she's not a Jedi. She never became a knight, much less a master.
That's fine. And I call all light side force users Jedi.
Yeah, and she apparently tried to train Sabine, but thought she was going to be a Jedi for revenge instead of for the quote-unquote right reason, so that all tracks, makes sense. Mm-hmm. Mike says, I think you guys are in for a rude awakening with Sabine's fate. I can definitely see a future with little or no real lasting consequences for her, and I think it's a shame that this may ruin the show or Star Wars in general for you. Sabine's a new character for you and you have no attachment to her, but there are millions of fans out there, and more importantly Dave Filoni himself, who have an incredibly strong attachment to her, and I do not see him the type of creator like George Martin to take the headsman's axe to a beloved character. Personally, I'm fine with this. My enjoyment of Star Wars may be a bit more juvenile than yours, but it does not hinge on whether there are real life consequences represented in the show. Again, Mike, that's fine, but that's a hard no for me, dog.
All the better. All the better. Fuck with their emotions.
No one's saying that you have to kill Sabine. Mm-hmm. I think her, like, being very challenged by the dark side, or having a lot of adversity and having a lot of for fucking up this bad and doing something this selfish, like, even from a Jedi perspective, this is not the Jedi way, man. And there should be a price to that. And if you want to watch the Saturday morning cartoons, more power to you, but I don't. Brian, I'm not down with the argument that Sabine needs to pay some kind of cost for the choice she made. If she destroys the map in the position she was in, she'd have been murdered in the ensuing seconds. One may argue that it's morally responsible to sacrifice herself if it means preventing the suffering of millions. This is where I just fundamentally don't agree. It's a reasonable conclusion. Do they want us to believe that Thrawn returning is an existential threat, when my understanding is that canonically Thrawn was bested by a teenager doing a mind meld with space whales? I mean, that's the incarnation of Thrawn that we're dealing with, right? The Emperor is dead. Thrawn doesn't have the galactic infrastructure or the ability to shoot finger lightning. What are we so afraid of? Especially if I'm Sabine and have been working against the system all my life, and now I have the power structure of the Republic on my side. Am I crazy? Didn't Thrawn already fail time and time again with the Emperor and his fleet at his back? Now that the Emperor and all the levers of power have gone, I'm supposed to just give up my life and the chance to save a treasured friend just to stop him from being in the galaxy when presumably we have the overwhelming advantage? How do you judge the... Because I can kind of see what they're saying here, that if Thrawn didn't beat the galaxy when he had all these possible advantages, why are we so afraid to go? But to me, that's just another failure of storytelling. Because I'm fearful of Thrawn coming back from what I remember of the character. But it seems like in Rebels and Clone Wars, they just kind of like wharfed him into the ground. And like, he's kind of like, what I'm saying, I guess, Brian, is you shouldn't feel like this. You should feel like the show is telling you that Thrawn is an existential threat and it's a Sabine's doing. And you're taking like what the show's actually showing you and be like, well, that doesn't make sense. So. But that's, I mean, yeah, they're either doing a bad job of telling a good story or they're doing a good job of telling a bad story. And I can't see either way.
Yeah, it's so the impression I've gotten, not having watched Rebels, is that it wasn't just like a teenager on a whim deciding one day to go best Thrawn and it happening. It was the combined efforts of the entire rebellion plus a fucking Hail Mary by a powerful Jedi that didn't even kill him, didn't destroy him, just kind of took him off the map for
a little while. Yeah.
Yeah. And it cost them dearly. And now you have a new Republic that's trying to get off the ground and is in its own form of chaos. I mean, yeah, the rebellion probably was weaker overall, but there's a lot of opportunity here for Imperial loyalists to sabotage everything that's going on with the New Republic. And if you have a master tactician come back and kind of spearhead that entire effort, he's going to be way more effective at that than you would just having these disparate sort of you know, the Imperial diaspora out there doing their thing, right?
Yeah, and we saw, like, didn't we see Admiral Paleon? Was that in Mando or Andor? Where, like, you're, like, yes, the Imperial Remnant is a threat and the New Republic are too blind to it, but also they're squabbling and they're just about personal acquisition of power and holding on to their prestige. And you get the idea that, like, there is resource and infrastructure. They've been telling that story, I think, the best that they've, of all the threads that they're doing, that's the one they're selling the most consistently, that they're just waiting for a great man to step out of the shadows and lead them. And that's what this is.
Yeah, but they're waiting for their Mon Mothma to step up and lead the rebellion, right? Like, if you believe that the rebellion could take out the Empire, then why don't you believe that a remnant of the Empire could take out the New Republic that's in
with
chaos?
Effective leadership and belief. And Jeff says, given that Filoni is picking heavily from the heir to the Empire stuff, I wonder, after hearing you mention Ezra and Sabine seem like siblings, if he's just saying fuck it and putting a direct adaptation of the original Thrawn trilogy with the one-to-one character replacements rather than recasting the major players. Now that Thrawn has been introduced, plus Paleon from Mando, I guess it was Mando, we have a squint and you can see it, Saturday morning cartoon version of Han is Mando, Luke is Ezra, Leia is Sabine, 3PO's Hiang, R2's Chopper, Obi-Wan's Ahsoka, Lando's Greef Karga. What? Because he's black? What? Yeah. Mara Jade, Darth Grimes, Joris Kaboth, Saboth, Darth Stevenson. Borsk Faleya is the annoying Imperial dude in the Senate. They find a way to make Zeb CGI reasonably affordable. You've even got a Chewbacca based off his original Ralph McQuarrie concept art. I can't decide if I'm slightly excited or marginally horrified. I guess both. I'm horrified because, like, if you just sent me this and this finale was successful, I would have been excited because I'm like, I can actually see that. I could actually see you just doing Heir to the Empire with a couple of chairs rearranged. I have zero faith that he can pull off an Heir to the Empire. Like, in the prologue to Heir to the Empire.
Beat for beat.
And he, because in the prologue to Heir to the Empire, he's made Thrawn look out like an incompetent and like a delusional one at that.
Mm-hmm.
Jameis from the Isle of Man says, you have mentioned that you feel the Disney approach to Star Wars is a bit of a confused mess, and a more rigid three-track approach for kiddies, young adults, and adults, longtime fans would make it more enjoyable for all involved. I entirely agree with this comment, and indeed it appears another arm of Disney does too. You may be aware of this, but the High Republic Media Project is very specifically divided between these two age designations. I looked it up, and this is really interesting. This is an initiative that Disney came out with in late 2021 that's like a multimedia. It's a lot of novels. It's a lot of, I think, comic books and, like, web animation
stuff. Star Wars universe?
It's set in the High Republic, which is 200 years before the Clone Wars. Okay. So it's like it's the Jedi at the height before Palpatine, before all the Plagueis bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, yes, and maybe this is a skunk work, like, in case of emergency, pull ripcord on this in case the Filoni Favreau stuff doesn't work. But, like, yeah, that's I'm glad they're experienced, because to me, that's the obvious thing. That's the way you make it's the only way you can make everyone happy. The only way. Let's see. Caleb says, what does Star Wars have against recasting? Why do we need to de-age everyone? Am I out of line here and think it's okay to recast Mark, Carrie, or Rey? What are the rules around this? No, I think that's what they need. If they're going to continue to fuck around in the Skywalker era, they need to recast Luke and Leia. And eventually, Rey, Darth Swanson. They have to. Like, it'll work.
I think it's almost a given they will cast somebody else in Baylan's role. Because they're clearly doing more with him. This is not the end of his story, obviously. And it's an important part, it seems. So, they got to recast
him. And there's
a
long tradition of Sith Lords wearing shit on their face to obscure their identity. Okay? Like, they
and then
they
becoming
could do
Force
that.
Ghosts that don't even look like the person they are. So, yeah.
So they could do that. I mean, that's a way they could go down. And I would vastly prefer them. If you can recast Batman, if you can recast Spider-Man, if you can recast James Kirk, you can recast Luke Skywalker. I promise you. And it'll be better. It'll be better. Casey says, I have a question for you. How does Ahsoka even have a Padawan if she's never finished her training?
Padawan in name.
Yeah, it's like if the U.S. government outlawed doctors tomorrow and shut down all the medical schools, which might not yeah. be too far-fetched. I could still see doctors feeling like they have a call to do medicine, and they might induct young interns and residents and call them that, even though there are no more medical schools. Like, it's like they're still trying to keep what they can alive, and it's probably going to be shittier, and it's not going to be as good as having a governing body over it. But like, that's the way. It's like, but you wouldn't be like, those post-apocalyptic doctors are not real doctors. Like, they're
yeah, it's a fair question. It's technically true, but like,
yeah,
she thinks of her as a Padawan. I'm okay with that.
But that's where Darth Swanson's getting with his Boken Jedi. Like, he's dismissive of like, well, they didn't, you know, obviously he's like, they don't have a medical degree on their wall. So
yeah, yeah.
Christine says, Baylan was standing at the statue of the father, which is next to the statue of the son. Interestingly, the daughter is not next to them. And then Ahsoka finally saw her Maori owl. I think the light in the distance might be Abeloth, the mother who is in Legends, a mortal who filled the role of the mother with the three Mortis gods. But then she drank from a special fountain that was not meant for mortals in order to gain power, and it corrupted her into the being of destruction and chaos. She had to be banished and locked away by the daughter and the son, both of whom died in the Clone Wars, except for the daughter's life force transferred into Ahsoka to resurrect her. What the fuck? Get all of this off of my yard. Get out of here. Pat, I don't even want you on the sidewalk. I know it's technically legal. I have to allow you to ease, but get the call the cops. Make them. You're going to have to make me.
This is why we have loitering laws. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to start blasting classical music to drive them off of my lawn and having fluorescent lights to make everybody's skin look bad. I just can't have this. I can't have this, Jim. This was not edited by me. This was just an email sent to me. What am I supposed? What?
There are no gods in Star Wars. Get them out of here. The Force is just a natural thing that binds everyone. It's not caused by gods and shit. I don't want this Marvel stuff in here. Fuck it.
Well,
fantasy
Han said
bullshit.
He'll see you to hell, which means the Christian God exists in Star Wars.
Obviously.
Deal with it.
Obviously.
Chad says, so at the start of the series, I had what I thought was a comfortable front seat on your lawn, and turns out I was trespassing. Mid-season, when you came out swinging and kicked those of us off your lawn for just looking for a good time, I took a big shit in the corner and just got off it. But now I'm back with a big six-pack of Stella, a bag full of edibles, and yes, I'll clean up my shit. God damn it, Aaron, you were right. The Holdor maneuver was visually cool, but ultimately a stupid cannon breaking stunt. I see that I'm hurting the quality of franchise by tuning in for every series and movie. From now on, I'll be a little more critical of what Star Wars content I choose to throw my heart and dollars at. Welcome to the lawn, brother.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the lawn. Please
Here,
don't
have
shit
a
on anymore. But yeah, pop up a lawn chair. You're good. You're good. Meg says, Aaron, your prediction about the undermining of Ezra's rebel sacrifice was 100% right. Ezra removed the great galactic threat of Thrawn just to waltz up to Hera with a new haircut, mind you. A sideways grin, seemingly fine with releasing Thrawn and his undead army on the galaxy. I needed more conflict. Sabine needs to face some consequences for her selfish, foolhardy behavior. She hasn't even had to face consequences from the people closest to her.
Yep.
Maybe he's playing the long game and showing how destructive enabling behavior is from the people who love you.
Yeah.
And how that goes down a bad way. But I doubt it. I doubt it.
Mm-hmm.
Final email for this week. Again, I'm sure we'll have more next week. Double T from Melbourne says, really like the finale apart from the witchy magic. The Force should be the only supernatural power in Star Wars with different cultures and customs surrounding it. To paraphrase Han, creating zombies and swords out of thin air is not how the Force works. Now that the season's finished, what's your opinion on Filoni? He was the second banana to Favreau in the Mando show, so this is the first look we've had of him as lead show writer and showrunner. What do you think of him as a potential creative heir to the Empire? Mm-hmm. I think you know the answer to that at this point. But the reason I want to read his email is he says, finally, you wouldn't remember it, but I wrapped a show called Andor as a Star Wars show to watch out for a full year before it came out in the Mandalorian feedback. If I had a reputation, which I don't, I'm sticking it on the line again to put the Acolyte on your radar. Like Andor, it's been made completely outside the Favreau Filoni-verse and that team. Like Andor is made by an acclaimed non-Star Wars voice, Leslie Headland, who created Russian Doll, among other things. Description. Set 100 years before The Phantom Menace, The Acolyte is a mystery thriller that will take us into the High Republic... Wait. Take us into the galaxy of shadowy secrets and emerging dark side powers in the final days of the High Republic era. Essentially, a couple of Jedi go down a dark investigative path to discover the possible reemergence of the Sith. We're told to expect a more adult tone, and it stars Amanda Steinberg, who played Wolverine's clone slash daughter in Logan, and it's out next year. High Republic, the new Disney adult track, acclaimed pedigree. This, I guess I'd have to give this a shot, right?
I will say unto you the same thing I said about Andor. I'll wait for the reviews.
So he's going to, so what'll happen? That will translate this into bald move speak.
Mm-hmm.
Three or four episodes will go by, and I'll either get an undeniable din for my feedback, or I'll get a couple of fucking cartoon watchers saying, it's the best Star Wars ever, which I'll dismiss. Mm-hmm. But if I get the undeniable drumbeat of this is good Star Wars, I will watch it. If I get to three or four episodes and I think it's good, then I'll bully Jim into watching it. And that's how we do things. That's how we cover all the Star Wars here on Bald Move. And that's how we keep the lawn not be shitted.
That's how I have to treat this, man. I have to be skeptical of everything coming out of this factory because I've seen the product and they've had one hit and then they've shit it up again. I need to know more before, like, a cool premise and some good people behind the scenes. Yeah, that's exciting, but I'm not going to jump in day one on any of this shit.
And it is
people
exciting.
Are saying the same about Obi-Wan, like, hey, this could be awesome. It's a different crew. It has nothing to do with Filoni and Favreau. Yeah, and it fucking sucked. It's not a guarantee that just because you get out of that wheelhouse, you're not going to suck.
But it would be cool if the High Republic era got off to a good live-action start. So I'll keep an eye on it. I always keep my ear to the ground. We'll see what happens. Star Wars at baldmove.com. If you got more thoughts about this season that we need to talk about, please send it there. I assume we'll have a wrap-up. I mean, maybe no one will have anything else to say. There will be no more defensive the Holdo maneuver. Everyone just got off our yard. I don't know. But I'm expecting there will be lots more to talk about. Star Wars at baldmove.com. If you'd like to support us, if you'd like to be a yard guardian going forward, we would appreciate your support. Support.baldmove.com. Ad-free feeds. Tons more bonus audio and video content. Whew! Made it through another season of Star Wars. If you want to follow us along on our other journeys, we're starting up Loki this week. That was one of the good Disney Plus Marvel projects. Check out our social medias everywhere at baldmove.com except for TikTok. We're at baldestmove there. Thanks for listening. I appreciate everybody who is respectful with the yard, who embraced the yard concept. I hope we can be a beacon of positive Star Wars criticism going forward, as long as the property is worth criticizing. We'll see you on the next Star Wars thing or next week for the Ahsoka wrap up. Until next time, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
May the Force be your companion always.